Blessed morning to you guys.
Cap Blessed Hawk. Morning back at you, Doc.
Captain Hawk.
What we're going to do right here is go back.
Walking on campus, I run into Gerald Graves. He said, my brother Marcellus is leaving Wichita. Doesn't like it. Would you guys be interested in him at Northern? I said, in a second. He calls his brother.
You make a scholarship offer.
That my body can't
cash.
Right. He lives in the Robert Taylor home. I am downstairs. I'm standing there with a police officer, and I'm thinking, there's no such thing as a cell phone back then. This is early 80s. How am I going to get that kid and let him know I'm here? A little kid's walking by. I said, hey, there's $5 if you go get him and bring him down. 2 minutes later, here comes Marcellus.
How thick was your wad of cash that you gave?
Not a lot. I was making $4,200 a year.
I know if you, like, pulled out a big wad of cash and you're handing out, like, 20.
Gets in the car, and he says, Coach, I haven't eaten in 3 days. He gets, like, $20 worth of McDonald's and just gobbles it down. Get him back to DeKalb, and he wants to come. And he had not paid some stuff that he owed at Wichita, parking tickets or whatever. They wouldn't release his transfer.
So he couldn't come to Northern.
He did not end up at Northern.
Wow, you have to get your $20 back?
I did not.
Stories by Cap. From the 7th floor of the Tribune Towers.
Boy, this has been tremendously tremendous.
In downtown Chicago.
Chicago! Bolton scores! Beauty!
Come on, sucker.
He is moving like a tremendous machine.
Let's get it on.
It's the Cap and Haw Show.
Everyone has to do their job.
We're going to fall until we fall.
That's a shot and a beer.
Do your job.
That's the Hazleton way.
Let's begin now.
Yeah!
All right, welcome in. Cap and Haw on the air. Comcast Sports at WGNplus.com where you can stream this fine program. He is David Haw, lead cop, Chicago Tribune. I'm David Kaplan. We have our phone lines here for you at 312-235-2525. Mike Jacobson, our executive producer. Matt Rooney, our associate producer. Pat Costell back in his director's chair. And Brooke Weisbrod has all of our updates fresh back from doing a game at UConn last night. What's up, buddy?
Good morning, Cap. Tell me another story. Tell me another story, Cappy. Cappy.
Uncle Cappy's story.
That should be a segment of Uncle Cappy's recruiting stories. Tales from Another Life.
Yesterday.
That was fun. Yesterday. Good morning. Interesting night last night. We're going to talk about the Bulls and who are those guys? What happened to the Bulls team that we're used to seeing? Third loss in a row. Very unusual week here in Chicago. We've got a little mini crisis with the Blackhawks, little mini crisis that's continuing with the Bulls. All of a sudden, that extended spring that we thought was going to go, you know, dual playoff series going into June, not looking so good right now. But the Bulls struggle last night in Houston. We have a lot to talk about as far as that goes. We will get to some other things, including your little Cub nugget that you broke last night online that I think is bears discussion, the James Shields possibility with the Cubs. We want to get to that. We're going to talk to Will Perdue, which is going to be interesting. He'll continue that saga. He'll fill in the rest of the story about him and Michael Jordan, the story that got a lot of traction yesterday nationally. And also a little recruiting follow-up with Pat Fitzgerald and
Tim Beckman
and the ball coach from Illinois.
Yeah, we'll get into the Tim Beckman comments yesterday.
Go team!
He called in on another radio station on Boers and Bernstein, and that got interesting. And we're going to, it's the elephant in the room. We got to ask him about it, but we also want to talk about his program.
We do want to talk about his program. I think that's where the first misstep happened, was because he took an opportunity to talk about his program, to lecture the media on things that he's not well-versed in. He did, you know, say in a fine column on the front of the Chicago Tribune sports section this morning by Shannon Ryan. I think that when you ask a room full of journalists to be more positive or to, I don't even think being positive is what is at hand here. It's to lack objectivity. That's what it's all about. And Steve Greenberg wrote something very, you know, similar and well done in the Sun-Times. You can't do that. And yet, what he's asking that room to do is not unlike what a lot of coaches ask journalists to do on a regular basis.
Lovey.
Lovey Smith pulled me in a room first year I was on the beat.
You were the beat guy.
I was the beat guy in 2004. It was his first year in Chicago. He had been in St. Louis as a defensive coordinator. He worked in Tampa as an assistant coach for the Bucks. He'd come from a lot of college towns where you tend to see this environment a little bit more conducive to go team, supportive of the home team. I lived 10 years in South Bend. I'm familiar with that environment and what that expectation is from the local ball coach. Lovie Smith pulls me in a room at Hallis Hall. What I had written something about, and I was the beat guy. I wasn't writing columns like, you know, get rid of this coach. I was the beat guy. I'd written something critical, analyzing their lack of a pass rush, I think it was. And he said, David, well, I don't understand what you're doing. Why don't you see it the way I see it? And something to the effect of get on board. And why isn't Chicago more like St. Louis? I remember him saying that. Why can't Chicago be more like St. Louis? And I was like, Lovie, I've been here 5 minutes, you know, okay. Welcome to Chicago, though. Things are different here. It's a big market. You've got to expect that. We're not all fans.
He told a friend of mine in the media, he said, why can't this be like the University of Oklahoma, where what the coach says is absolute law, and you people will follow that law? And I'm like, have you lost your mind?
I think my Lovie Smith was only slightly better than yours, but both were terrible.
Right.
Okay.
Yours was better.
But the expectation from a coach to have the media on his side isn't new. Isn't new. We have coaches in this town, Cap, that currently employed, that quietly do it in a different way. They want to manipulate the media to get them to see things from their point of view. Agenda-driven journalism happens in Chicago, happens in every major market, happens in smaller markets.
Okay, the best journalism markets in terms of intensity for sports, Chicago, New York, Philly, Boston. Would you agree?
Yeah. I think that's a good four. Chicago, Philly, New York, Boston. I think you get passion from readership, viewership, listenership, whatever you want to call it, fans. But I do think in those towns, whether it's pro or college sports, you do have a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes that is in the same spirit of what Tim Beckman was trying to communicate yesterday. His problem is that when he addresses these issues, it's clumsy.
Yeah.
He's
a nice man.
He's not getting good advice. Nobody should have gone where he went yesterday.
He could have said it this way. There's been some negativity around our program. Yeah, we've struggled with our record. We're getting this thing turned. We're getting it fixed. And I'm going to give you people so many positive stories to write about that you'll have no place in the paper to fit anything else.
He could have said that. This is what he said instead.
I'm going to leave this up to you guys. Okay? We're all in this state. So I'm going to put it on you. What are they reading? Okay? Social media is big nowadays. What are you saying? What are you saying? Well, I can say that we've gotten better every year. Okay? I can say that our academic standards have gone skyrocket. The challenge is still, how important is the University of Illinois to you? Because it's very, very important to us. And we know that we can be successful if we're all in it together.
Now, that's, again,
I grew up here before. You didn't. I grew up here.
Right.
You were in Indiana.
Right.
I did not grow up a fan of the University of Illinois. My dad went to DePaul.
Even if you had, Cap, if you are covering that team.
Can't be a fan. Like
your
that.
Obligation is not to the team that you cover. It's to the people that listen to you, that read you, that watch you. I spent 10 years covering Notre Dame, and I always remember this. We were in a conference room, and the late Mike Wadsworth, who had a ton of respect for, was the athletic director for Notre Dame for several years. A guy who came from Canada and savvy in the job, but not really that understanding or tolerant of the objectivity of the media. And I was a columnist finding my way, young columnist in my 20s, finding my way, criticizing Notre Dame whenever it was necessary. I wasn't a Notre Dame fan. I wasn't a Notre Dame hater. I believe in objectivity, okay? That's what I do. I love journalism because of that. Mike Wadsworth was in a meeting room when we were covering the Joe Moore trial, and he got up. And I'm 25, 26 years old, whatever, and he points at me, and he says, "You do not understand the way it works here." And I'm in a meeting with my sports editor and my managing editor because we were called to the principal's office basically because of what I had written. You do not understand the way it works here, son. You are covering Notre Dame. Without Notre Dame, what would South Bend be? You do not understand this. And look, there's a lot of people that believe that in South Bend.
Muzzling the press.
At Notre Dame. And I have to say, he attempted to intimidate me, and it worked for a little bit. Because you're like, this guy's a former diplomat. Big guy, booming voice. What do I know? I'm a 20-something columnist trying to make my way, right? So it goes on in less clumsy, less public ways. Every athletic department in America that is, Illinois is a Big Ten program. Notre Dame's a national program. It happens. This isn't new. What's new is when you put your foot in your mouth and you don't communicate a message with any degree of eloquence. That's the problem. The message, heard it before.
All right. We'll address the elephant in the room with Coach Beckman. He will join the show a little later tonight. Elena Deladon's going to class up our studio. The Sky Guard's going to stop by for a few minutes at 9:25. Will Perdue will be with us at 9:40. Pat Fitzgerald, 10:10. And Tim Beckman, get on board. We'll talk with him at 11:10. All that's coming up. It's Cap and Haw. You're watching Comcast Sports Net, WGNplus.com.
Now, more Cap and Haw on Comcast Sports Net and WGN Plus.
We continue the Cap and Haw Show on Comcast Sportsnet and WGNplus.com. Let's switch from Tim Beckman.
Yeah, we'll get back to that.
We'll get into Cuddy a little later.
We'll get into that because we have college football later in the show. You reported something last night, and I should rephrase that. You tweeted out something last night that I think got Cub fans very excited. You said the Cubs are kicking the tires on James Shields, the free agent pitcher who has yet to sign with the club.
Correct.
And maybe for a lot of different reasons. Maybe his asking price is too high. Maybe it's not a good fit. Whatever it is. But the fact of the matter is, according to your sources, it's February 5th. James Shields does not have a home, and the Cubs are at least exploring the possibility of signing him. And he has the Cubs on his list. Is that a fair appraisal of what you reported?
Correct. The Cubs are... Here, the source I talked to has intimate knowledge of what's going on. I called the Cubs, and of course they're in Arizona already, and they're not commenting. But the source that I talked to is impeccable. And he said, look, the Cubs have been laying in the weeds on this one, waiting to see who would come back, fall back to the pack.
Let me stop you right there for a second. I'm going to sound like Tim Beckman here, giving you a little bit of a lesson, or trying to. Now, at the risk of sounding condescending here, you don't say impeccable source. Because you don't have to apologize, Cap. You're credible. You talk to people. Your stories in the past have worked, okay? Just, it's a source. That's enough. Okay. Impeccable means it sounds like you're trying to oversell it. I believe you when you say you've talked to somebody who's reported this, okay? And your source says that the Cubs are interested in James Shields. From a Cubs fan's perspective, that's exciting. Because this is a guy who could help round out your rotation in a season you're supposed to win now. So if you say that your source tells you that, that's very, very compelling, even if the Cubs are in denial mode. And you know why they're in denial mode. Because they don't want other people to know that they're in on James Shields.
Correct. So...
Sorry, okay, that's a brief aside.
Thank you. So they are involved. From what I've been told, they're looking to do a 3-year deal. They don't want a 5-year commitment to this guy.
The Cubs don't.
The whole market has changed. A lot of teams are out of money. They've spent their budgets. So the Cubs have held some powder dry, and if he is truly interested, there's a shot they get this done.
I love that term, powder dry. You also had information that is a nice little nugget. No free agent pitcher who has signed after February 1st has signed a contract richer than $50 million.
Correct.
Why do you think that is?
Teams are out of money. The big fish are always off the market.
Do you think James Shields miscalculated the marketplace? Why do you think he's still out there?
Because he's older. He's 33.
Is he 33?
Uh-huh. Going to turn 34. You give him a 5-year deal. His velocity has declined. His metrics are really good. But if you get him on a 3-year deal...
3-year deal's really appealing if you're a team like the Cubs.
Let's say you went 3 for $60.
Mm-hmm.
Just a guess. $60 million. You got to figure, barring a catastrophic injury, you're going to have a good pitcher this year, should have a pretty solid pitcher next year. If year 3 even tails off, you're out of the deal at the end of the year.
Right. 3 years is
5 years, different story.
3 years is not excessive. Okay, so answer two questions. Number one, how does the Edwin Jackson contract factor into this equation?
Doesn't.
If it does at all.
Doesn't.
You don't think the money they still, Edwin Jackson will make them reluctant to ante up if the price goes north of $60 million?
I think they have a price in their mind that they're willing to go to.
Okay.
I think years, term is more important to them.
All right. So if Edwin Jackson's situation is negligible, then the next question is, what would signing James Shields to a 3-year contract, let's say, do to your potential interest or your ability to land David Price?
I don't think it affects it.
Really?
I do not.
You think they could still sign James Shields and still be in the David Price sweepstakes next offseason?
Yes.
That's very appealing.
But when you look at their team, cost control at first, Rizzo locked
yes.
up. Minimum salary at second, Baez. Minimum salary at third, Bryant. Cost control at short, Castro. Soler locked up. Center field, minimum salary. Right field, minimum salary if it's a kid out
Fowler's
there.
Fowler's
control.
Fowler
on a 1-year
yeah,
deal.
Right.
You got Chris Coughlin, doesn't make a lot of money. DeNorfia, doesn't make a lot of money. Montero, locked up already. You don't have anything where you go, oh, my God, we don't know what we're going to. It's
the biggest,
totally different.
The bulkiest contract on this team is Edwin Jackson's. And you're just stuck with that, right?
You have 2 years left.
Your payroll right now is around 120 if you're the Cubs, isn't it? Because of John Lester?
A hair less.
Okay. You're really getting up there if you're Theo Epstein and you have a $120 million payroll.
Okay, but if you go to your owner.
$5 million a year manager.
You go to your owner. Tom, Theo, what's up? You're not going to believe this, but James Shields wants to come.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just painting a scenario. It's not fact. It's
not reporting. No sources, no impeccable sources are reporting this. This is just speculation.
Speculation. We can get this guy for 3 for $20. It's going to take our budget up, but we need to know that still in July, if we're in the race and we need to add something, we could do it. If you're Tom Ricketts, you got your renovation started.
It's going.
You got your new radio deal. You're working on your TV stuff. And all of a sudden,
you got your manager.
You got your celebrity manager, and all of a sudden you go, I'm in.
Joe Maddon was a big factor in the reason why John Lester ended up with the Cubs. What role could Joe Maddon play?
Huge.
In Shields. Okay.
He was his manager.
Is that why the Cubs are in the mix?
Yes.
Because mostly Madden's influence?
Huge tie.
He had a good experience playing for Joe Maddon. I mean,
correct.
Did anybody not have a good experience playing for Joe Maddon? Because it seems like it's hard to find somebody who, oh boy, that was torture.
Right.
My days with the Rays, I just really did enjoy having all that fun.
Wouldn't you like to have a python and a penguin in the clubhouse?
I mean, who wouldn't like to have a job where they go every day to the office or the clubhouse and like, oh boy, this is too much fun. This is, you know.
Got a band playing behind batting practice.
How quickly do you think this could come down if it happens? And who else do you know is in the mix?
It's going to move quick. Padres are involved. The Marlins are involved. The Yankees are involved. The Red Sox are involved. There's a bunch of teams.
Yankees, oh, boy.
But if you're James Shields.
Oh, boy.
And let's say the Yankees are 3 for $20 and the Cubs are 3 for $20. And I'm not trying to sound like Tim Beckman's biggest booster here. But the Yankee team is old. They're in the middle of a rehab. They're not ready to win.
I can't wait to tell your guy Girardi what you think of his team.
They're old, man. I told Joe he should have been the Cub manager.
Oh, boy. I think in 3 years he'll want to be, but that job will be filled.
Yeah.
And James Shields to the Cubs. They're kicking the tires. Very good report. Good to get that out last night. And I think if they get him, boy, then Travis Wood, is there cause and effect? Is he then on the block?
I believe Travis Wood could be in a deal to go to the Phillies with Wellington Castillo.
Which
there's
also,
other teams involved as well.
And you also reported that last night.
Yes.
Okay.
So
good stuff.
Lots going on. Elena Deladon's going to be in our studio for a few minutes as they promote the Sky and women's athletics. And she'll be with us. And then we will get into Jay Cutler after what Fran Tarkenton said yesterday. Don't forget, Sports Talk Live TV Week continues tonight at 5:30. It's ABC 7 night.
All right.
Yes, Robbie Bachwal and Dion Miller from ABC 7.
Enjoyed the Channel 2 night. Megan Malwicki brought it. Ryan Baker, very
they
good.
They both brought it.
So Laz, a little too much Laz.
Laz is great. Hawks, Jets tomorrow. Pregame coverage starts at 6:30. That's all coming up. We'll take a quick time out, get an update with Brooke, and we'll talk to Elena Deladon. Be right back on Cap and Hawk.
From Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is Cap and Hawk on WGNplus.com and CSN Chicago.
All right, welcome back. We roll on here on Comcast Sportsnet. The Cap and Hawk Show, Elena Deladon of the Chicago Sky, and one of our great USA basketball players joins us in studio. Great to see you. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me here.
Absolutely. Tell us a little bit about coming back to Chicago now. You're doing a lot of media stuff. That's a big responsibility because you are the face of the franchise.
Yeah, it's great to be back. It's definitely a little cold here, but other than that, I've really been getting around a little bit, talking about some new campaigns for the season and just trying to stay top of mind for our Chicago fans.
Where do you spend your off season, and how much do you commit yourself to playing or just resting, because you know it is a long year?
So I spend my off season in Delaware with my family, and I commit a lot of time to just working out and not as much on the court stuff. I've been weightlifting a ton, you know, conditioning, as well as doing some hot yoga, trying to build some core strength to improve my back. And now I'm adding on the basketball and adding in days, so probably about 3 skill days. And then I'm also playing in a men's league, 2 men's leagues in Delaware.
Like a regular rec league against guys? Or, I mean, is it...
It is.
Do you dominate?
The one league, it's a bunch of, like, ex-college players, so they're great. And I'm more of just kind of a spot-up shooter in that league. But the other league, I'm able to do a lot more and try to dominate a little bit.
Absolutely. You play against guys like me,
probably. Yeah, don't
probably.
Be shy. You can say it. It's all good.
You are very, very close to your family.
Yes.
I'm the father of a special needs child. You have a sister who's unbelievably important in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about how that changes your perspective, because people see you as this unbelievable athlete, all these honors, beautiful girl. There's a lot more depth to you than people realize.
Yeah, I'm definitely not just the basketball player, and I like to think of myself as a really well-rounded person. And that's another huge reason why I don't go overseas, because I just need a lot more time with my family, and all my interactions with my sister have to be in person because she's both deaf and blind. So hand-over-hand sign language, hugs, kisses, laughs, that's all we really have.
How's your health? Because obviously not just last season, but since you became a member of the Sky, you struggled with the Lyme disease. And how is that going, and what is the latest, anything new in that regard?
I've actually been doing really well and really just staying on top of my treatments and visiting with my doctor a lot more often, so about twice a month, just to really stay on top of things and stay ahead of it. And we now have a plan going into this season that will hopefully continue to keep me healthy.
The other day I'm watching the Nets play, I'm trying to remember who, Boston maybe, and the free throw shooting was ridiculous. They were awful. 2 for 12 for this guy, 2 for 13 for another guy. You made 80 in a row.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about that, and I don't know if I could ever do that again. But for me, it's just kind of almost limiting the shot. Like, I don't take many dribbles because I don't want there to be room for error. So I take 3 dribbles, keep it really simple.
Same routine every time.
Same routine every time, and not much leg movement, and just basically get it into my shot pocket and lift and flick.
Steve Alford, when he was at Indiana, would have a routine, and the crowd would chant it. Socks, butt, 1, 2, 3. He touches socks, his butt, 3 dribbles, and let's go. And he was money.
Yeah.
But I'm amazed that pro basketball players making tens of millions of dollars.
It's because
awful.
They can make tens of millions without having to shoot free throws.
It's just embarrassing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess they're not really focused.
How often do you see a highlight of a free throw? Kids don't grow up wanting to have to shoot free throws.
Until they have to win the game with them.
Yeah, exactly.
It's huge, though. It is. Free throw shooting is everything in close games.
So it's great that you're here. It's great that you're promoting the Sky and the WNBA. On American soil.
Mm-hmm.
But how tempting is it to do what Diana Taurasi did? And that is, she's no longer playing for Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to Russia, and they're going to pay her $1.5 million.
Well, they're paying her $300,000 to not play the summer.
And essentially, they're paying her, to not play in the WNBA. And the money over there has to be at least a little bit tempting. You said you want to be here for your family. You've got to respect that. But is that, how hard is that internal struggle, if it is hard at all?
I mean, yeah, I'm not going to lie. The money is definitely tempting, and there's a lot more money over there right now to play. And, I mean, I respect her decision. She's been playing for 10 years and has probably had 20 off days that a year. So she's got to be tired and ready to take that rest. But for me, it's just family has always been most important, and I don't think dollars will ever, you know, pull me away from that.
Well, was the Sky against Phoenix in the finals last year. So without Taurasi, you know, I mean, how do you guys, what was missing from winning the final piece?
You know, they just had such a well-rounded team and a really strong bench as well. So I think that's something we're going to have to build upon and just have a lot more depth this year. But, I mean, it's going to help with Devi and out.
It's a nice piece of the puzzle not to have to defend, for sure.
Exactly.
We're talking to Elena Della down here. What would you like to do with your life when basketball's done?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you see yourself?
Yeah, I've definitely thought about that, and I would love to set up a basketball academy where I'm teaching, you know, young girls and boys how to play and play the right way and really focus on skills. And, you know, I love kids. I love basketball. So if I can combine those two passions, that would be great.
How about broadcasting? I mean, whether it's a commentator, whether it's in studio, whatever. I mean, Brooke's coming back from a game.
She was a Big Ten yesterday.
Yeah.
Breaking it in.
Exactly.
Do you enjoy that, and can you see yourself doing more of that?
You know, I do enjoy that, but not nearly as much as just being on court and teaching. So you never know. There could be an opportunity in the future that I wouldn't pass up, but we'll see.
Yeah, people probably want your opinion. They pay them a lot of money for it.
We're talking a lot about the Bulls. I know you haven't been in Chicago that long, but you've been here long enough to know what a Tom Thibodeau team looks like.
Mm-hmm.
When you watch the Bulls, what do you think? We're talking about them all morning. What's wrong with the Bulls from your, trained eye?
I don't know. I just feel like they've kind of lost that hard-nosed side of it, that they've always been, you know, that brute team. So I just think they have to get back to that. And obviously, defense is everything. And if they can get back to that, then they'll be the Bulls we know.
You've also done some modeling. Do you like doing things like that?
I do. And I definitely want to explore the fashion world a lot more. And I've been speaking with my brother, who's my manager, about, you know, getting me into the fashion world. Yeah, Gene.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to kind of explore that path.
Okay,
well,
let's explore this. Does Cap's purple tie go with that checkered shirt?
Nope.
Give us a
I'm not,
fashion.
I'm not,
come on,
you get honest to the dresser.
You're,
anything
you're
like
the expert
that.
Fashion
that
expert.
Doesn't go.
It might be a different purple.
Cap, that's a different purple.
Okay, but you should see his socks.
Yeah.
You should see his socks.
Yeah.
They don't go with anything. And he would gladly show you.
Okay.
Because that's
his thing.
Are they
nice and warm at least?
Yeah, they're okay.
Yeah.
We have no shame about ripping each other about clothing in here.
I can tell.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just asking. I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but I wanted to put you on the spot because Cap is wearing his tablecloth this morning.
I like what I'm wearing.
It's okay.
That's all that matters. Fashion is, you get to choose what you wear.
Beauty's in the eye of the beholder.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
When you watch college basketball, what programs do you like to watch? Is there any one or two that you, and obviously, the teams that you watch reflect their coach. Any coaches mm-hmm. out there that you think, you know, you really respect?
Connecticut. I mean, what Gino has done there is absolutely unbelievable. He's just
but some people respect him, but don't like him.
No, I respect him and I like him. He's a great guy. So I love watching Connecticut play. They're just such a well-oiled machine and a force to be reckoned with.
All right, last one. Coolest celebrity you got to meet because you're Elena Deladon.
Michael Jordan. Easy question.
Where'd you meet him?
I met him at the Jordan party last year at NBA All-Star, and, I mean, I'm in awe of him, and I've always been obsessed with Michael Jordan, so to meet him was really special.
And you're going to the All-Star game, right, coming up?
Yeah,
what
do
you got
planned
there?
Again. Different parties. I'm not sure which ones I'll be going to, but
parties.
I'll be in the shooting competition and then also the Special Olympics game.
Very cool.
All right, again, throughout the 2015 season, Sky players, coaches, staff will distribute 10,000 basketballs to area children, giving them the opportunity to get in on the game. For each $10 dribble-on ticket purchase, an underprivileged child in our community will receive a basketball and a chance to dream. Visit chicagosky.net to learn more. Sky opens the 2015 season June 5 at Allstate Arena. They'll unveil the team's 2014 Eastern Conference Championship banner. Call 866-SKY-WNBA. Visit chicagosky.net. Get your tickets today. Thank you for being here.
Yep. Thanks for coming.
We're fans of yours.
Thank you.
You got it. We'll take time out. We'll produce next. Be right back.
the Cap and Haas Show on WGN Plus and Comcast Sportsnet.
Was it just Buschler and, like, Steve Kerr? Was he just beating up the little white boys? Let's be honest.
No, he beat up a big white boy, Will Perdue.
Perdue got one also?
Typical Phil, you know, running this play, and Will set a legal pick on MJ. MJ said, Will, don't do it again. What are you talking about? That's Will. MJ said, all right. Phil said, run it again. Legal pick. MJ walks up to Will. Boom.
Let him up.
It was over. So the next day on the plane, Will gets on the plane with a huge shiner.
That's Horace Grant on Hot 97 in New York a couple days ago. And that story just blew up.
Really did.
And one of my favorite guys who comes to work at Comcast Sportsnet is my guy Will Perdue. Love the guy. Saw him last night sparring over the SEC, and I was dogging Vanderbilt.
You were sparring with Will Perdue?
That wouldn't end well for me.
You don't have a shiner.
And Will said something. Hey, Will, what was the chant you chanted at Vanderbilt?
Well, while you guys were on the show talking about, you know, all the signings yesterday, I said it takes a special kind of athlete to go to Vanderbilt, but it also takes a special kind of athlete to succeed at Vanderbilt and move on.
And then you said something about that's all right, that's okay, you'll work for us someday.
I said that's what our school fight song was.
That's what it was, school fight song. Will Perdue joins
Morning,
us now.
Will.
Thank you for taking time. We'll get to the Bulls in a second. So Horace goes on Hot 97 in New York and tells that story. What is your side of that story?
Well, as you and I were joking last night, and just so you know, I gave a bunch of body blows. I didn't want to put any marks on the face.
That's good.
Of you guys' television.
That's smart. Thank you.
But it was Johnny Bock, because as you guys know, when you used to watch the Bulls back in the 90s, Johnny Bock was kind of like the defensive guru. He did all the scheming and everything for opponents. And I forget who we were flying, and this was back in the day when it was back at the old Multiplex. We were tucked in that little gym there on the end of the building. And we kept running this screen role play, and they said, hey, for 48 minutes, this team tomorrow is going to continue to run screen roll with whoever MJ was guarding. And it was a guy that could shoot. So the last thing you wanted to do was go under a screen, because he would just stop behind and knock down the jumper. So they said, this team is going to continue to run the screen roll for 48 minutes. So we're going to run this play like 10 or 12 times. And, you know, this is my chance now to lay a little wood, get a couple shots on him. You know, so we just kept running it. And eventually he got tired of it. And as Horace said, he said, listen, if you do that one more time, you're going to pay the price. And I just kind of looked at Johnny Bock, and Johnny Bock got a little smile on his face, because Johnny Bock was the one that Michael would always get mad at, because Johnny Bock would never call any fouls when we used to scrimmage at practice. And Johnny Bock was the reason why Michael walked out of practice periodically, because he thought that there's no way, if I can't win, I'm not playing. So we ran the play again. I made sure that I got him good, laid him out, actually knocked him down. He didn't necessarily walk up on me, but once he got up, I was just kind of standing there, and I had my hands down. I didn't think he would do that. And he got me pretty good. So by the time I finally realized what had happened and then started to chase him down, they all grabbed me. So it didn't last very long, and you know, I'm not sure what I would have done if I would have caught him. But
yeah, how would that have gone, Will? Because you're talking about a guy that had you. Yeah, you don't want to hurt a Michael Jordan. You don't want to go after him, because if something happens to him, then you may have been an ex-Bull.
that's quite a possibility, but you know, it's one of those things. It's just a reaction. Somebody hits you,
right?
And you're like,
right?
You just do that?
Yeah.
Right, well, I got to get him back, but you know, NBA guys can't fight anyway, so it doesn't matter.
In context, Will, throughout your long NBA career, did that ever happen with another player that hit you in practice?
Well, I joked last night on TV. I took tougher shots from Bill Cartwright's elbows. You know, that's the thing that people don't realize. And that's the difference, I think, a lot of the difference now between the league now and the league then. I mean, you can talk to anybody that played back when I played in the 90s. I mean, we had fights in practice constantly because of how competitive it was. It wasn't necessarily Michael against this guy, Michael against that guy. You know, Axe is getting mad. I'm, you know, something's going on with me, and, you know, I'm getting tired. I'll get hit by Bill Cartwright elbows. You know, Brad Sellers is getting mad with somebody. Sky's getting mad. Horace, you know, because it was competitive. Guys wanted to play. And, you know, it wasn't like you were out to hurt somebody, but you're just like, listen, I'm going to push you until the point where maybe I can overtake what you're doing. But that's just what made our team so good. You know, I tell people this all the time with that Bulls team. We didn't necessarily like each other, but the one thing we had was respect for each other, and we knew what our goal was. When we stepped on that floor, we had each other's back.
Yeah, after you got traded, we had Rodman in studio. I don't got this has got to be 3 years ago here at GN. And he said on the air, he said, I showed up the first day that they traded for me. He said, and it was probably the last time I ever spoke to Michael Jordan other than on the court stuff, like, you know, switch this or slide here. He said, we never, ever, ever talk. We'd be in restaurants. He'd be at one table, Pippen at another, and me at another. And those guys would laugh and talk. They would ignore me totally. But he said, Michael walked up to him the first day right after the trade. He said, we got the best team in the league. You screw this thing up, I will kill you. He goes, and I never spoke to him again. And I knew, okay, I got certain things I can get away with and certain things I can't. But he also said, what you said, everybody respected everybody on the court because of how hard everybody played. Agreed?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And the one thing that Phil said to Dennis was, he goes, listen, I don't necessarily care what you do in your free time. Just don't get arrested. Just don't make a mockery of the organization. But what I need you to do is show up and play. And there's numerous stories that Dennis would miss practice, no big deal. But when it was important, and Phil felt that he needed Dennis to be there, he needed Dennis to be in the film room, he needed Dennis to be on the floor, and Dennis didn't show, he'd send somebody to go get him, and they'd wait for him. Now, that didn't make guys happy, but yet they also knew how important Dennis was to the makeup of this team and for them to win championships, what they needed him to do.
Okay, well, let's look at this year's Bulls team, the losers of three in a row now last night in Houston. More of the same kind of odd dynamic going on here with the Bulls as a team that is as deep as any that Tom Thibodeau has coached, and yet it's as unpredictable and inconsistent as any he has coached. And it starts defensively. They're not getting it done. Derrick Rose talks afterward about a lack of communication, not necessarily effort. I wonder if the two are related. When you look at the Bulls and people ask you, just generally speaking, what's wrong with this team, where do you start?
Numerous places you could start. I mean, first of all, you could go back and look at last night's box score. You know, granted, you do a nice job. I mean, defensively, it was okay. But the thing that I had a problem with was the fact it's 50 points in the paint by the Rockets. Little 50 points in the paint. Sorry, guys, to interrupt you. One of the college officials I know just went by. They travel as much as I do. But and some of those points last night were just right down the middle, uncontested layups against the half-court defense that was already set. And that just befuddles me to let that happen. Then you're talking about a team whose defense was number one in the league last year. You only force a Houston Rockets team into six total turnover, six for the game. And, you know, we broke a play down last night where Tyus Gibson wide open in the post, and Mirotić didn't pass him the ball. Now, part of Mirotić's problem is right now he's thinking, and he's just not playing basketball. He's just not, you know, reacting, acting. He's thinking about everything he's doing, and that's causing a problem. There's the rotations on the defense are late. That's causing a problem. You know, my whole thing is I keep saying there's some underlying tone here. Something's going on that we don't know about. You know, I'm not in the locker room. I'm not on the road with these guys. You know, because there's, as you guys just pointed out, there's way too much talent. There's way too much individual talent. Guys that have won championships. You know, now you're talking about a first-time All-Star. There's something going on here that's preventing these guys from really playing and coming together as a team like they should. It's not about, hey, we're still trying to figure it out. We're 50 games into this thing now. It's not like we're only 20, 25 games. We're 50 games into it. Yet the All-Star break starts next week. I mean, this is, you know, some people will be like, oh, we got plenty of time. Well, if you're not careful, you're going to be saying that with 10 games to go. You got to start showing some urgency here, and somebody's got to step up and figure this out.
Hey, we appreciate you taking time. Know you got a flight to catch. You are a busy man. Where's your next college game at?
I'm actually down in Gainesville. I got Florida. I mean, so Kentucky at the Gators this week. But, hey, Cap, I will say this before we get off and not to ignore Hobb, but the one thing I will say about you, I don't necessarily agree with your opinion, but you come with passion, and you do it because you love the game. You're not making as much money as people think, but you're still making good money to pay for that outfit, those outfits you wear.
Will, you're the best. I love you, man.
Thanks,
you're the
Will.
Greatest.
All right, guys. Talk to you later. Have a good weekend.
See you up at CSN. Thanks. That's my guy, Will Perdue. I love that guy. I do. He's such a good guy.
Does a nice job.
And he loves to spar and have give and take.
That's one Vanderbilt graduate that you do like to be around.
Correct. Yeah. That's exactly correct.
Him and Hunter Hillenmeyer, maybe.
That's another one. Yeah. Very good.
DJ Moore?
Yeah, Chris Williams was a nice man.
Cutler?
Not so much.
Okay.
We'll get into Cuddy. Got to take a quick time out. Yeah.
We're gonna touch on him again?
We are.
What did he do now? Is there another opinion on Jay Cutler?
There is.
Oh, wow.
And I've been doing a lot more research, too, on a couple other things that
you might not wait. Like. So we are having a change of heart. Change of heart.
I didn't say that.
Oh, who's behind you there so you could... Is there enough room there for you to backpedal?
I'm not backpedaling.
Okay.
Haven't backpedaled at all. I'll give you my opinion. You tell me if I've changed.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
I know you will.
Look forward to that.
Quick time out. We'll come right back. We got an update with Brooke. Your calls, 312-235-2525. Pat Fitzgerald, Tim Beckman will join the show today. Be right back.